morning and welcome to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Co-host Elaine Andrews is away. Today, we welcome APD's Acting Chief Ken McCoy to the program. Chief McCoy was named acting on April 26th upon the retirement of Justin Dahl. In the APD's 100-year history, Chief McCoy is the first African-American to serve in the role. Chief McCoy has served almost three decades with the APD, the last 4 years as Deputy Chief of Operations. He's a longtime Anchorage resident, graduating from Bartlett High and earning a bachelor's degree in justice from UAA. Before joining APD, Chief McCoy attended the New Mexico Military Institute, where he received his commission into the United States Army in 1990. He served 10 years with the Alaska Army National Guard and received an honorable discharge at the rank of captain in February of 2000. McCoy is active in the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, with the military, or with the FBI training programs, and also with the International Association of Chiefs of Police and the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives and the Alaska Peace Officers Association. So, Chief McCoy, welcome to the program. And what I would say about this is you are all in for professional policing, it sounds like.
Yes, I am. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, and I'm so glad to have you. It's a really interesting time here in Anchorage. We're between, we're waiting for the results of an election. Your immediate supervisor retired, so you stepped up into the acting role of police chief, and you're probably, you know, wondering, you know, whether you'll be able to continue in that role. So you know, we'll talk about all of that today. And also ask you questions about body-worn cameras and, you know, community oversight of policing and, you know, use of force, all the things that are, you know, currently hot topics, both nationally and locally. So we'll get into all that. I do want to let our audience know that we welcome their questions throughout the hour. We can take them by phone here in Anchorage. The number is 550-8433. And I also keep checking our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if we do get questions for your chief, I will try to get them to you so you have another opportunity to speak to the community in Anchorage.
Perfect.
So let's see. Let's get started. I wanted to begin a little bit with, you know, personally. I mean, I've seen your picture. You've even been on Hometown Alaska or Justice Alaska in the past, or maybe Talk of Alaska. So you're a known face and person here. But also, we don't know that much about you personally. So I kind of wanted to know. I learned that your family came to Alaska. Your dad was in the Army, so that's how you landed here, right?
Yes. We arrived here when I was in high school. So my father was stationed at Fort Richardson, and I got to attend Bartlett. So mm-hmm. Go Bears.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I was wondering what kept you here. You know, I wondered if you were an avid fisherman and it was like, oh, the chance to go to Seward and hook some halibut was what kept you here, or what was it? So what was it that kept, that made Anchorage your home?
Yeah, so, you know, I originally grew up in Virginia. And when I came to Alaska, one of the things that attracted me to Alaska and Anchorage was just how welcoming it was of a community. It felt like everyone was welcome here. And that just that sense of community really, it really sold me. And so raising a family and being part of this community here is really the things that kept me in Alaska all these years. And again, just such a welcoming community.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't feel, the African-American community is small here. I know many people came up for job opportunities and pipeline jobs and all kinds of things like that, but it's still a pretty small community. Do you find it easy to navigate between, say, the African-American community, the Alaska Native community? We have Hmong community. I mean, it is so diverse here, and you say it's welcoming. Do you feel like you personally were able to, you know, meet people, have friends in all these different communities?
I do. And very interestingly, you asked that question. When I was young growing up in Virginia, you know, we lived in really in a pretty segregated part of Virginia. My schools, for the most part, were segregated, primarily African-American. And when I was about 12 years old, we moved from Virginia to Germany. And it was really my first time being out of that environment. And it was an eye-opening experience for me, getting to see different cultures and interact with different people. And some of my best friends at that age were German nationals. And then we came to Alaska, and it seemed like everyone was from someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And it really allowed me to develop and feel comfortable interacting in all kinds of different groups. And my personality as a young man was, I was involved in everything. I was in the band. I was in JROTC. I played football. I ran track. I did a little bit of student government. And so I was just really comfortable in many different settings. And I think that's carried through to where I'm at today.
That's interesting. I want to ask you also about policing. Why was that the work that you chose? And when did you know you wanted to do that?
Well, I jokingly say, when I was growing up, I wanted to be three things when I grew up. I wanted to be a soldier, I wanted to be a police officer, and I wanted to play professional football. And I always say two out of three ain't bad. And so growing up, I just really loved the service aspect of belonging to something greater than yourself, being able to contribute to your country and to your community. And again, I just gravitated towards that line of work in the military and law enforcement. And so, Kathleen, I've been wearing a uniform since I was 18 years old. And, that's, over 30 plus years of service to my country, to this community. And I can tell you, I wouldn't change a thing about it. Serving has been the privilege of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You've also come up in an era really interesting in policing. Excuse me, Chief. There we go. Really interesting in terms of policing, because we've had in this country a rising awareness of conflict between different communities and police officers. And things like Ferguson, Missouri happened, or certainly more recently, George Floyd. And I just want to ask you, as a police officer and as a person of color, when these incidences happen, what goes through your mind as a police officer, but also as a person who's a person of color?
Yeah, so it's definitely been a challenging time for law enforcement. But really, one of the first things that I think about is how thankful I am to live in Anchorage, where our police department and our community has such a great relationship. The support that we have from the community is tremendous. However, it does tell me that there's work to be done. And when I look out across the country and see things that are occurring in other communities, I know that it only takes one incident for us to be having those same conversations. And so that's what we have to do, the preventative work, and build those relationships with the community and be willing to look at our practices and our training and to ensure we're doing it right, so we don't find ourselves in that type of struggle with balancing the policing and the community.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point that it takes one incident. And, and I also am sensitive to the idea that national issues can invade our minds, and we think it's the same everywhere, mm-hmm. And the fact that Anchorage might actually have steered a course safely here through the diversity in its communities is an interesting question, and one that will always spark conversation, I'm sure. I wanted to ask you, I read that you have three children that you raised here in Anchorage, and I think they're still here, so they haven't fled the state yet, so we haven't had a brain drain from your family yet. But I just wondered, as a police officer, as a person of color, did you have those conversations with your children about how to behave when a police officer stops them, maybe for traffic violation or for anything?
Yeah,
did you have that
yeah.
conversation with your kids?
I did. And, I specifically with my son, he and I have those conversations. And my son's a great kid. And I call him a kid. He's 26 now. And he's a lieutenant in the Army. And he's, you know, I mean, just a great kid. However, those are the conversations as an African-American man that I have with my children, with my son. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, with him being a lieutenant in the Army and doing so well, I still laid awake at night until I heard him, you know, come home when he was out with friends and so forth. Because those are the concerns that I had for my children, and knowing that they're great kids. And so I truly understand how, you know, the issues that we see between police officers and people of color in our community, how that impacts families. And so I have that perspective.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit painful, isn't it? Because your professional life is law enforcement, and yet there's dangers fraught with that for just people in the community if the wrong thing happens, if the wrong steps are taken. So it's interesting to hear you talk about that. Let's see. I want to go ahead. Let's see. First, I want to just let our audience know that if they want to ask Ken McCoy questions about, you know, the future of the Anchorage Police Department or his goals for the police department or, you know, body-worn cameras, what's going to happen in Anchorage or just you know, how police officers are disciplined within the Anchorage Police Department. He's been around the block a couple times with many jobs within the APD, and he knows a lot about this. So in Anchorage, if you want to talk to Ken McCoy, give us a call at 550-8433. And again, you can also send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I know, Ken, you are ready to take those questions. So I can tell that you're used to doing it. So let's turn a little bit to this election. This is the election for the mayor of Anchorage. We've had a runoff. It's been a really tight race. We don't have the final numbers, but it is definitely looking, and even Forrest Dunbar, candidate Forrest Dunbar, has said he's not sure he can make up the deficit in votes anymore, but we're still waiting. So I guess it puts you in a very tenuous position. You became the acting chief when Chief Dahl retired, and you pretty quickly said, "I would love to have this job. I would love to go forward as, you know, not the acting chief, but the chief." And the election, you're just sort of caught up in this whole election. And right. I guess the police chief serves at the pleasure of the mayor.
That's correct.
That is correct.
We do.
Okay.
Yes.
And I saw interviews with you on Alaska News Source and also Alaska Public Media. You have said, whether I have this job for 2 months or I have it for 10 years, I'm going at it with the idea of, you know, improving community relations, transparency. Tell me how you're thinking about it, and, you know, are you holding your breath?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Kathleen. And for me, I firmly believe that the police department must remain apolitical. And so I am optimistic that no matter the outcome of this election, that the future for Anchorage and the future for the Anchorage Police Department is bright. And I'm focused on public safety right now. I'm focused on safety of this community. I'm focused on building trust with our community. I'm focused on supporting the men and women of the Anchorage Police Department. And I know everything else would just fall into place. I'm confident that everything else would just fall into place. And like I said earlier on some of the other interviews I did, if that's for the next 2 months or for years to come, I'm going to just give it my all, and everything I do will be for the betterment of this community. And so that's where my focus lies.
Mm-hmm. So I think I also heard you say, I never expected it not to have a competitive process for the job. I assumed, you know, that I would, you know, apply. You didn't assume that you were entitled to the position. So I expect you will go through the process.
Yes. And, you know, I've been having to prove myself my entire life. and I've competed at every level that I've ever achieved. And this is just one more test that's being put in front of me. So mm-hmm. I welcome it. And this is what I've been doing my whole life. And, I've been preparing for this my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, one of the remarks you did make when you gave some interviews, talking about what the transition between the mayors and the police chief, you did say that, the biggest challenge is because a large portion of the community, and particularly communities of color, have lost confidence in law enforcement nationwide, mm-hmm. and that you were going to work very hard to improve that and work toward transparency. And so I guess we did touch on this a little bit, but could you talk a little bit, put that in context here? What kind of trust issues does our community have with the Anchorage Police Department that you are aware of?
Right. So, like I mentioned earlier on, we have a great department and we have a great relationship with the community. However, after the George Floyd murder happened, a lot of emotions came up within our community here. And I have had lots of conversations with groups in the community. And there is true concern and fear about interactions with law enforcement. And so when I look at my responsibility as police chief, it's my responsibility to ensure that the entire community feels safe and can trust our department. And when I have a group, whether it's a large group or small group, sit down, look me in the eye, and with emotion tell me their concerns and their fears, that for me, that tells me I have work to do. I have work to do to build the bridge with those groups so they can feel the same way about the police department that the rest of the community feels. And so that's the work that needs to be done. We have a great police department. I know the men and women here do this job for the right reasons, and they put their lives on the line every day to protect and serve this community. However, we have to be willing to take a step back and listen to all of our community members and be willing to examine our policies, our procedures, and our operations to see how those operations impact those communities. And we're talking about communities of color. We're talking about our African-American community, our Alaska Native community, our Hispanic community, our Pacific Islander community. If there are concerns in those communities, we have to be willing to listen and do what we can to earn their trust also.
Mm-hmm. As I was getting ready for the program, I was listening and watching, video and discussions. And one of the things I came upon was the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls grassroots effort to make advancements in solving these cases. And one of the people expressed on her Facebook page, concern you might not continue as the acting police chief because you'd been an important connection for them in trying to get more information. I know there's a federal cold case unit here, but could you talk a little bit about how the APD interacts with that federal cold case unit? I mean, the APD is the boots on the ground here in Anchorage, and we have had these cases right in Anchorage. Talk to me about that and how important the APD's connection to that grassroots effort is, and then again the federal angle on it as well.
Yeah, so absolutely, and these crimes are of the utmost importance and a top priority for us. And anyone that knows my background knows that I've spent a large portion of my career as a detective, as a detective supervisor, as a commander in our detective units that address primarily crimes against women and children, domestic violence, sexual assault, sexual abuse of a minor, I'm very focused on our efforts to combat those crimes. And so with this particular issue, we are focused on it. We have created our own internal cold case unit here within the Anchorage Police Department to help address those crimes. And we're working very closely with our federal, state, and community partners to ensure that we are addressing these crimes appropriately. And so, again, this is something that I intend to continue our efforts on. If I remain here at the Anchorage Police Department, it will continue to be a focus, and we're going to do everything we can to address it in our community. And again, it's a partnership. We cannot do this alone, and our federal partners play a big role. And We're doing everything we can to bring the appropriate resources to the table to address it.
Mm. You know, we're going to take a tiny break right now and come back in just a moment. But we're speaking with APD's Acting Police Chief Ken McCoy, and we'll be right back. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we have Ken McCoy. We are not related, Ken, right?
No.
Unless it's way back somewhere. but we share the same last name, and it's a good name. I've always loved my last name. I don't know. Do you feel the same way? to our listeners, if you want to talk to Ken McCoy, our number is 550-8433 here in Anchorage, and the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's see, you know, just to finish up that discussion we were having about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, you know, being that you were on the force, you've been on the force almost three decades, I think 27 years, why is it that something comes to light now or that there's a movement now? You know, I mean, and do you know how many cold cases that might involve Indigenous people here in Anchorage? Do you have a handle on that, or is it just something that there's a lot of cold cases and you just start going back through the cold cases and trying to get help from the public or help from the feds, or, you know, tell me about that. I mean, because you've been in the department for almost 30 years, and yet now it seems to be a peak moment for turning this around. Why do you think that is, and why is it that the problem has languished or lingered for so long?
You know, Kathleen, that's a really good question. It's a tough question also to answer. And, you know, what I've seen throughout my career is Alaska and Anchorage, we've always had historically high numbers per capita in crimes involving sexual assault, sexual abuse of a minor, domestic violence. And what we've found through, you know, our investigations are those are important components that are involved in the missing persons cases. Those are typically some of the factors involved. So, you know, we historically those numbers have always been high. I'm thankful that we finally have a spotlight being shined on this, and the appropriate resources are being brought forth to start addressing it. And I think that's where you know, we're focused right now is on how can we better respond to these incidents when they occur. And, you know, we're hoping to make headway. We're hoping to instill more trust with the community that, you know, these cases are a top priority for us here in Anchorage, as well as the entire state, and that we're able to effectively investigate and bring closure to them.
Mm-hmm. So maybe it was a resource question in the past. Sometimes maybe the focus wasn't necessarily on this, solving this kind of a crime. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Again, you know, we've always had a very robust response to these. However, I think it's just hyper focused now,
mm-hmm.
and which is a good thing. These are, you know, cases of the utmost importance. The spotlight should be shined on our missing women and girls, and we should be doing everything we can to help resolve this
mm-hmm.
issue.
Well, I know that as I said earlier, I did read a comment from one of the activists that's working hard on this in the community, really expressing appreciation for your openness to working on this and commitment to it. I guess we do have a caller, and we're going to go ahead and bring on Kiba, welcome to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. How are you?
I am feeling better and better the more I listen to Alaska Public Radio.
Oh, well, that's good.
I really enjoyed hearing the acting chief. I was very inspired by what I heard. I'm calling from California.
Really?
And I immediately, because I'm coming up to Alaska very soon, and I immediately looked up the chief when I heard he was from Virginia. I'm like, really? So I looked it up, and it looks like that the acting chief received his degree from the University of Virginia. Is that correct?
I did some graduate studies at the University of Virginia through the FBI National Academy. So, yes, in Virginia's home. So I really enjoyed being there on campus at Charlottesville.
Wow. Now, where in Virginia are you originally from?
My mother's side of the family is from Portsmouth. My father's side is Virginia Beach. So, you know, that's my old stomping ground.
Huh. Well, I came from out of state to go to the University of Virginia. And my question when I spoke to the screener, what I might want to talk about, I want to find out whether you had experience at the University of Virginia with the honor system in any particular relationship with Thomas Jefferson himself in your studies, because University of Virginia was basically the first American public university, as different than a private or a church-controlled school.
So, great question. And so my involvement with the University of Virginia, as I mentioned, came through the FBI National Academy. But regarding honor systems, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm very familiar with honor systems. And I attended, after high school, I attended the military academy for my first years of college at the New Mexico Military Institute. And our what was instilled in us then was duty, honor, and achievement. And that's something that I've carried with me my entire life, and that I firmly believe in, is that creed of duty, honor, and achievement.
Hmm. Kiba, when you get up here, you should go have a cup of coffee with the chief.
Well, here's the thing, and I will cut to the chase on that. My focus, my whole professional life, has been ecological health, watershed sanctity, that sort of thing. Very much influenced by Native peoples. And I will share this one. So the point being is I'm interested in staying around the Tongass National Forest. What I researched, it seems like the Tongass National Forest, not only being the largest one right there in the southeast Inside Passage area of Alaska, It's also almost as much tree mass in the Tongass than all the other national forests in the continental United States put together. So my interest in forests and salmon and the indicators of a healthy ecosystem is what's bringing me up to Alaska. The only other time I've been there, I was in Anchorage, and, you know, I got back out into the bush as quickly as possible. But anyway, I will very much be interested in, at some point, connecting more fully with I'm going to call him Mr. McCoy, because in addition to being acting chief, that's what everyone at the University of Virginia, if they're male, traditionally refers to each other, even the professors. So the students call the professors Mr., and the professors would call the students Mr. And that type of equality is what runs through Jeffersonian philosophy on this planet. And I very much intuitively hear the goodness that Acting Chief McCoy is sharing through the radio. So thank you very much.
Kiba, thank you. It's amazing.
You.
Yeah, it's funny that you found us streaming probably from California. So that's not the question that I thought would come through for Ken McCoy this morning. But Chief McCoy, I think we should turn to some of the issues that we know are pretty hot here in Anchorage. The community voted in the last election to support through paying for it, you know, because these are expensive things, but the body-worn cameras. And so that's going forward. And there's a policy being written, and I want to talk about that. I know that you are going to have a community listening session at Betty Davis East High coming up June 16th from, I think it's 6 to 8, and I'm sure there'll be more media out about that to remind people. But, you know, we have a link to the draft policy that was available through the Public Safety Advisory Commission. So we have a link to the proposed policy. We also have a link to Alaska ACLU, just things to think about, you know, like, you know, it's one thing to say we've got the cameras. It's another thing to say what are the policies. So I want to talk to you about that, Chief, and a little bit about some of the areas people should be thinking about. One of them is, when are the cameras turned on? Are they turned on all the time? And I know the policy is still in draft form, but maybe you can talk to us about how the APD is looking at that. Are they on 24/7? Who decides if they're on? Can an officer shut it off? Go ahead and talk to us about that.
Yeah, so thanks, Kathleen. So I'm really excited about us starting this process to getting body-worn cameras deployed with our officers. And so for me, the most important component of this is the policy that will govern how we implement and utilize the cameras. And so this is one of the first big initiatives for me here at the police department. And with this initiative, I'm honoring the promise that I've made to the community that I would always listen and that they would be included in these types of policy decisions. And so, yes, we're going to host a public listening session on June 16th at Betty Davis East High School. And I'm hoping the public will come and share with me their thoughts, their concerns, their expectations about this system. And as you mentioned, our draft policy that's online. So, yes, we did our homework. We put together an outline draft policy based on national best practices. We've had some consultations with some of our partners with the Department of Justice. And we put that together. And really, that's just the framework, the starting point for the conversation. But what we're going to have to make decisions on is what does the community want to see? And body-worn camera systems across the country, their policies vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So there are many questions that our community is going to have to answer, such as, you know, who's going to wear the body-worn cameras? When are we going to activate them? When do we deactivate them? You know, are we going to be required to notify the public that we're recording? Will we be recording victims? What about sensitive locations like locker rooms, residential bathrooms? What will the policy be regarding the release of the video? So, these are many, many, and there's many other important questions that we're going to have to answer. But for me, the first step is hearing from the public and getting their input.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the sensitive areas are? Well, we talked a little bit about them, but I think public disclosure of footage is probably, you know, as soon as there's an incident, people start asking for the footage, right? The public wants to see
right.
it. The news media wants to see it. I realize, does the draft policy address this at all, or is it on a case-by-case basis?
Right. So, you know, we're hoping to get some clearer guidance once we finalize the policy, which, however, right now, is truly, drafted as a case-by-case situation. And there are many factors that we have to consider. Alaska has a very strong privacy clause in our Constitution.
Right.
There are also, concerns that the Department of Law has raised regarding, having a fair and impartial jury, if this information is broadcast, it could impact the ability to get a fair and impartial jury. So these are all kinds of questions that we really have to look at, examine, and see where we land. And like I mentioned, it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Some jurisdictions have requirements that the video is released within a certain time frame. Other jurisdictions don't allow for the release without approval from the Department of Law as to it won't impact criminal investigations. So we'll really have to work our way through that
right.
to come out.
Right. And it's true that the APD is not new to cameras because you've had dashboard cameras for a while. I don't know if that's universal and, mm-hmm. whether the rules that govern the dashboard cameras will influence the body-worn cameras. Do you have a sense of that?
Right. As you mentioned, we do have dash cameras in our vehicles. And so, those have been, really released on a case-by-case situation or basis. And whatever we do with the body-worn cameras is going to affect that policy also. So they will be aligned. And we will be releasing video with the same guidelines.
Yeah. So we've got that public meeting on June 16th where you're just listening at Betty Davis East High School, 6 to 8 p.m. But do you have a timeline idea of when this might go into effect? I mean, that's your first listening to the public. What else
right.
has to happen with the policy?
Right. So that's our first session. And then after we take that input and refine the policy, we'll be presenting it to the Public Safety Advisory Commission. And then we'll, through each phase, we will refine the policy based on the feedback and the discussion. And then we will continue to move along. So after the commission, we will move to the Assembly Public Safety Committee. Then the next step will be sitting down and giving these presentations to our community stakeholders, the various groups in the community, such as the ACLU, the NAACP, we have to present this to our Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. So there are many groups that are stakeholders in the community that we will need to dialogue with and get input from as we work to implement this policy. And then after we meet with our stakeholders, we will have a final public presentation where the public can give us additional feedback and input on the final policy before implementation.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's going to take a while and that there's going to be a lot of opportunities for people to weigh in or stakeholder agencies to weigh in. Maybe by the end of the year, do you think? Or you just don't have any idea?
Yeah, that's the target for it. By the end of the year, we will have a policy in place that everyone has had an opportunity to provide comment and feedback on. And hopefully we'll end up with a policy that really meets the needs of the citizens, that instills trust, accountability, and something that allows our officers to be effective. And by the end of the year is what I'm looking for.
All right. And I just before we take a break, I just want to tell our audience we've got a link to a really interesting analysis story. PBS NewsHour looked at, body-worn cameras and effectiveness, whether it changed policing behavior. And it's a mixed bag of research. Some cities jumped on it and then backed away. So if you're curious and you want to know more, that's a good background. It's a link to a well-researched story by PBS NewsHour on body-worn cameras. All right, we're going to take a tiny break here, Chief McCoy. You're listening to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we are here with APD's Acting Chief, Ken McCoy, and we were just talking about body-worn cameras, and that has brought in a couple of callers, Chief McCoy. So let me go to let's go to John. Welcome to Justice Alaska, John. What's your question?
Well, my question concerns potential excessive use of force by police officers. Don't get me wrong, under certain conditions, police force has to use some kind of a policy to allow protection of the officer himself. But the reality of it is I'm concerned about excessive force, and I want to know what the chief plans to do about training of his officers with regards to eliminating the attitude, especially of basically making a decision that's essentially equivalent to an execution when in fact, many situations are such that the police officer has to protect themselves, but also at the same time, the attitude of the police officer needs to be under some kind of constraint. So I'd like to know what the chief thinks about those programs and how they might be applied with his training program. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, John. Go ahead, Chief McCoy.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question, John. So our training is something that we're always looking at. We're always looking at ways to do this job better, to do this job more safely, and to better protect our community. And so de-escalation is something we place a heavy emphasis on, and that's giving our officers the ability, the equipment, the tools to go out into the community and to de-escalate situations, to solve problems without the use of force. And we all know in this line of work, there are times where force is necessary, and we want to ensure that whatever force is used is reasonable under the circumstances and that we can use the least amount of force to accomplish our mission of making an arrest or protecting another. So that is something that we're always looking at. We're always looking at how to be better, and de-escalation is a big portion of that. As this relates to body-worn cameras, we feel like the cameras are going to help instill a higher level of trust from the community and our police officers in the work that they're doing. It's also going to serve as an important piece of holding officers accountable. And I also feel that the cameras are going to help protect our officers from unfounded complaints. So I think the cameras will serve as serve that purpose for all. It will impact both officer and civilian behavior.
Mm-hmm. You know, Chief, could you just what is the use of force policy and chokehold policy for the APD at this point, which is, you know, sort of peripheral to what our caller is asking? You emphasize de-escalation, but do we still have the use of a chokehold policy here in Anchorage?
No. We have banned all neck restraints and chokeholds at the Anchorage Police Department.
Okay. And John, does that answer your question, or do you have any follow-up? I think you answered his question. He's gone.
Great.
We'll go to another caller. Caroline, welcome to Justice Alaska and Hometown Alaska. You have a question for Chief McCoy.
Yes, I do. One of the things which I was going to mention is the way Alaska is. I've been here 50 years, and this whole thing about pulling together, I remember in 67 being in Fairbanks and the difference that I felt of how people got along. And that was different from where I came in the rural South. The thing which people do not seem to understand is the cost to the municipality when any municipal employee does not provide the work results they're expected to in a way which is not hurtful to others, i.e., justifiable behavior on the part of the police and others, a suit can result, and the municipal citizens are going to pay for the cost of that suit, and that's something which I don't think gets factored in very often. That money just doesn't fall out of the sky, which somebody may be awarded. I can't remember the young girl's name that was killed in her bedroom. I can't remember now where it was, but the figure I heard, which I was shocked at because they didn't even wait for a trial, the municipality granted her mother $12 million. Mm. So, again, that's the kind of thing which the community as a whole, property owners and so forth, need to factor in to why it's important for all municipal employees to operate under the set of rules that they have been given and have an attitude of doing something that they have a hard time doing with respect for the person that has committed the so-called wrong. Mm-hmm. And finally, real quick, I was told this by someone, and they ascribed it to an Inupiat elder and weren't positive, but let's just say whoever said it was dead on, and that is you do not look at the color of the hand that reaches down to help you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, Caroline. Any reactions, Chief?
Thank you, Caroline. And she makes a really good point that, you know, bad police officers are very costly. And it's not just in the dollars and cents. A bad police officer can totally destroy the trust that the community has in their police department. And all police officers do not want to have that bad officer, on the force. And that's where it's important that, you know, we truly look to hold those bad officers accountable and to get them out of this profession. Because, again, the impact that they can have, not only financially on a municipality, is devastating, that of what they can do in destroying trust in not only the Anchorage Police Department, but the entire profession. As we know, with the George Floyd murder, that had ramifications nationwide. We were dealing with the fallout from that officer in Minneapolis. So a bad officer can be very costly.
Mm-hmm. You know, to that point, Chief, you were in Interior Affairs, I think it's called. So that is the police department's own disciplinary channel. Is that correct?
Yes, that's our internal affairs unit.
So you have done your stint there as a leader, and I'm trying to get at the question of the theory that there's a few bad apples out there, or there's some kind of systemic problem going on. And it gets to be touchy when investigations of police officers' behavior is not released because it's a personnel file. Could you talk a little bit about, I know the APD has its own internal, and also if it gets involved, is it called the police standards? People will look
council.
At the council will look at it. Talk to me a little bit about that, because when you're out here in the community, you're on the outside of the police department, and you're mm-hmm. speaking about trust and building trust. And, how do you do that when you also have constraints with, collective bargaining agreements,
right.
personnel issues? How do you walk that fine line? When people say, well, they won't show it to us. They won't give it to us. That doesn't help with the trust issue.
No, you're right. And so really when we look at these situations, the first thing everyone needs to understand and realize, if an officer has committed a crime, they will be held accountable and prosecuted for that. So if the conduct is of a criminal nature, there are no protections for the officer. A criminal investigation will take place. Those investigations are turned over to the State Office of Special Prosecution, and those officers are held accountable for crimes that have been committed. And I think we can look at our department going back over the last several years and see that officers that have committed crimes have been arrested and held accountable for those. The next layer on that are administrative type issues and policy violations. So those are confidential personnel matters mm-hmm. that we have to address, and that we cannot release publicly that type of information. Mm-hmm. But as a police commander, we have to have the courage to address those types of policy issues and concerns, implement the appropriate corrective action, and be willing to hold people accountable when they don't meet those expectations. And that can lead all the way up to a termination here at the police department. And that is something that I'm very confident in our practices here at the police department, is holding officers accountable for that type of misconduct or policy violation.
Go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to mention the final piece that you mentioned is the Alaska Police Standards Council. That is an independent body that's able to look at officers' misconduct and make a determination whether or not to decertify them. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a very good system in place to hold officers accountable here in Alaska.
Mm. And I guess, we may not hear the end result of some of those investigations because they are personnel files. So, for example, an officer's losing their jobs because of their illegal or incorrect behavior, we wouldn't really hear about it.
Right.
I mentioned the Anchorage Daily News just did a series on over 10 years, the numbers of incidences of police officers, and this is across the state, including all jurisdictions, that no officer had been held accountable. I'm not phrasing that exactly right. I don't have it right in front of me, but I guess it's just because it is a bit outside the eyes of the public. It sometimes can feel like, we really don't know if the right thing happened, right? And that's just a difficult.
Right.
It's just a unique position where police officers are out in the community. They're so important to the community. The trust issue is so important, and yet you've got constraints on your ability to talk openly about some of the issues. So let's see. We've got a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask you, diversity and cultural training is something that Well, certainly the cultural training came up in the Public Safety Advisory Commission, which is a public body that relates to the APD, the fire department, the Office of Emergency Management. So I went back and read some of the minutes of their meetings, and I would encourage the audience to do that. You can find them on the muni.org website. But one of the things I saw that a topic right now in that group is cultural training. Seems like the that group, the Public Safety Advisory Commission, is pushing for more cultural training for the police department, and it hasn't happened yet. Chief McCoy, could you talk to us a little bit about, is there friction there, or does it just take a while? What's going on there?
Right. So, no, bringing new training to the department is something that we're definitely in favor of. And we are in the process of revamping our entire training curriculum. We want to bring in more meaningful cultural awareness training, training on implicit bias. And the way we would like to do that, though, is through a more direct interaction with the community. You know, it's one thing to put a textbook in front of an officer and have them, you know, read all about it. It's another thing to have someone sit across from you, share their experiences, look them in the eye, hear the emotion behind it. It just truly is more impactful. So we are in the process of revamping it all. We want to work with our community partners to make it a meaningful training, something that's truly going to get to the hearts and minds of the officers. And I think just the sharing of experiences both ways really helps build those relationships and equips our officers to protect and serve the community in the most compassionate manner possible.
So it sounds like you are committed to this cultural training and it's just working out the details. Is that right?
That's right. It's something that is high on the priority list for us, and it's currently being worked on.
Okay. I did want to mention diversity. I saw some numbers from last year, you know, that our police force is primarily something like 78.7% white, you know, American Indian, Alaska Native, 3.2%, Asian, 4.5%, Black or African American, 3.6%, a Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, 1.1%. So, you know, it's really incremental, small changes there. Could you speak to that? I know it doesn't happen fast, and you can do a lot of outreach, but unless people sign on, there's not a lot you can do. So speak
right
to your diversity at the APD.
Yeah, diversity is very important to us. We want to diversify our ranks. We want to be more reflective of the community, but it is a challenge. And we want to inspire persons of color to join the police department to help us diversify the ranks. And it's going to take having the community work with us to encourage our young people that, hey, this is an honorable profession. This is something that I can do to give back to the community. And so we're looking forward to working together on those.
Yeah, Chief, you hear the music and the curtain's coming down. So I have to say thank you so much to APD's Acting Chief Ken McCoy and also to our listeners and callers. I'll be back as your host on Hometown Alaska next week when we talk to the Alaska Center for the Book and their 30 years of promoting literacy in Alaska through books, poetry, and authors. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Emmert was our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.